Oh, about that.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, wherever you may be, go ahead and flash the three. Paul Calvisi, command and control. Flash the three right now with your neon comb on a cowbell Friday.
Flash the three, Paul, right in the face of David Shaw right now.
I'll flash a three, but I'm really channeling the spirit of Earl Thomas.
Paul, have you ever brushed back that Brillo hair?
Okay.
Have you ever brushed it all the way back, Paul, right, like Keith Partridge?
Right.
How about
never
three?
Wore Jordache jeans, Paul.
Yeah. Everybody's working for how about three, as in 300 pounds a wolf was approaching before he started on the treadmill last month.
Bully, you're not too far off the mark right there.
That's right.
It was a little brutal, yeah. Those Sidonians. There was stuff.
Yeah, just everywhere.
There was stuff.
I mean,
what in the heck is that?
I mean, Wolf was shopping with the old lineman, put it that way. He went into a men's warehouse, and he's like, oh boy, they got me in the DJ Humphreys Mason Cole line of clothing.
I kid you not, there were people from Johns Hopkins following me around, waiting for something to fall off, because I could not identify what it was, ladies and gentlemen. I won't get into detail.
Putting the full into former fullback.
Well, what's this transition, young broadcaster?
No more, my friends.
I mean, Wolf shows up to men's warehouse. They're like, sir, over here in the plus size section.
Speaking of flashing the three.
The jacket's a little tight.
According to Steve Keim, there were three names that were on the docket. He did not say who they were, but we know who they were. The three names being bantered about were David Johnson, but that rumor was only coming out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Only after Jay Ajayi went down, and only by Philadelphia media that were speculating, yeah, this is what you should go do. But the other two names made a lot of sense. Hassan Reddick was one, Deion Buchanan, I guess, was two, and Deion Buchanan was number three. And Jason Lockenfora was one of those people saying, hey, this is happening. This is going on right now, especially with Deion Buchanan. Steve Keim said, now granted, he put a qualifier on it, yeah, as of Wednesday, but Steve Keim said, come on.
Well, I mean, you guys know that the one part of my job is to have dialogue with other teams when it comes to trades and different transactions, but number one, the one thing that I won't do is I won't confirm or deny those in public. Those are
right,
things that, to me, that I have to do behind the scenes.
But
I will tell you that, you know, it's a lot of gossip. People enjoy it. It's water cooler talk. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that you'll read is certainly false. I know that on Wednesday I woke up to three different names that were brought to my attention, and those conversations never happened.
Yeah.
So I would just say, you know, for most fans to you know, tread lightly whenever it comes to trade talks, because very rarely are those accurate.
To me, one name makes a lot more sense than the other. Deion Buchanan,
yes,
in the final year of his contract,
yes,
does he really fit in this scheme, in this defense? Obviously, he's been struggling. He's been swimming and trying to ascertain exactly, you know, what his assignments are and his fits, and that makes a lot of sense. Hassan Reddick, if you were to trade the former first-round pick 2 years ago, you would get pennies on the dollar of that draft pick. And Reddick does
have... Not only that, I just don't... You know what, Paul? Two defenses in 2 years.
Yep.
I'm not ready to go there, no, and I don't think the Cardinals are ready to go there.
You're right. Great point. Two schemes in 2 years and a brand new position.
Yes.
Off the ball, yes, at the second level of the, yes, defense. And here's a guy who has a track record in college of kind of being slow on the learning curve. When he finally got it his senior year at Temple, look out. He was unstoppable and dynamic.
I look at that as twofold. Not only are you exactly right on you're going to get nothing for trading Hassan Reddick,
mm-hmm,
but why do it now when there did seem to be a glimmer of hope from the second quarter on in the last game against San Francisco? But speaking of the defense, did anybody else kind of go, whoa, when we asked Steve Keim about Robert Kimdichie? Because Kimdichie, bust year one, bust year two, he's been good so far this season. Not outstanding, not where you stand up and go, that was the greatest draft pick of all time. But he's been good. And then he wasn't there. And the only win of the season, he wasn't there. So we asked, where are you on the scale of guys get hurt, get over it, he's trying what he can. And the other end of the scale of, at some point, you're just not available, and we've got to move on.
Well, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, everybody wants to talk about ability. Ability doesn't matter if you don't have availability. So those are obvious concerns, and you have to be dependable. He's got the skills, and everybody sees that. He's been disruptive when he's been out there. But we need Robert to play. And, being a first-round pick, there's a lot of expectations, both from himself and from the organization. So expect to see him out here real soon. And again, back to being that disruptive player and why we drafted him.
How many times have we talked about in the past, Basinonians, being accountable and being dependable, right? I mean, it's an absolute must for so many of us in our lives, but especially in particular for a guy that's trying to make his way in the National Football League. You've got to be accountable, and you've got to be dependable. And part of being dependable is being available. You can't do it. The old saying, right? Even when I came into the league, can't make the club at the top. That's what everybody said, right? Metaphorically speaking, but it's really, really accurate. You can be the best talent on the face of the planet, but if coaches and evaluators cannot depend on you actually lining up consistently and playing, well, you know what? There's a huge pile that is outside the facility buildings of every NFL team filled with guys that just couldn't stay healthy.
And I would add to that, his own teammates are looking over there at that locker and wondering, what are we getting on a week-to-week basis? They want to be able to count on a guy who's supposed to be one of their premier players,
yeah,
one of their premier talents.
And good point, Paulie.
And right now, the Deitch, I think he needs to prove it not only to himself and his general manager, his coach, but his teammates. And he should value that more than anything, just about.
I remember sitting there, and I stand by it, even though I'm probably going to be proven wrong on it. We'll see in the years to come. But I thought Jalen Ramsey was far and away the best, the most talented player in that draft. I thought Kim Dichie was the second
most talented guy.
Now, remember, I hate to do this again with Paul here. Jared Goff was the first pick in that draft.
Oh, yeah. And that's Mr. Good. Jared Goff to you.
And my son, where does the rise again?
Carson Wentz was in that draft, and of course he's hurt and coming back from it. Hasn't looked great so far this year, but come on, it's Carson Wentz. He looked pretty good last night, and he was fantastic the year before.
Do you know the mind blow last night? NFL Network flashed his numbers from the first four games this year versus his first four games last year. They're actually better this year. And I totally agree with you. The eyeball test hasn't been nearly the same, but his numbers are actually better. And I stood there looking at that graphic on NFL Network going, whoa.
That's impressive. And you look at then this draft, there was a lot of players that have not done much between, I would say, Jalen Ramsey and then scrolling all the way down to Robert Kim Dichie. There's just a couple guys in there who go, Robert, it's not asking too much for him to be one of the best players in the draft, in that draft. And he was inconsistent even then, Dubbins. You're right.
I mean, he was.
We all knew about it coming out.
He was inconsistent. And I said, if I was in the top 10, I wouldn't draft Robert Kim Dichie. But I did also say this. If he's there at number 28, if I'm Steve Keim, even if I've got my board and I'm getting up and I'm walking around that table and I'm going to draft the Deitch if he's there at 28.
By the way, the real stat, if you want D-line right now, if you go to Kyle Odegaard, I'll give Kyle a shout out here. He crunched the numbers. And in that Niners game, when Corey Peters was on the field, they averaged just over 3 yards a carry. When he was off the field, the Niners averaged over 8 yards a carry. When the absence of Corey Peters and Robert Kim Dichie was lethal for that Cardinals D-line at the Niners.
Boy, is that a good setup for this Vikings game. Coming up next, what is the number one thing we want James Jones to answer today? Presser at 10:30. We'll tell you our answers next or what we want to hear on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Oh, yeah. You want to mosh it up, Basinonians? Elbows and knees, my brothers. That's the way we do it down in the pit. Postmaster General broadcasting on a weekday basis.
So, it's 8:19 in the morning. Monday morning at 9 o'clock. We're sitting here doing the Doug and Wolf Show. And suddenly we find out the Arizona Cardinals do not have a general manager. As Ryan McDonough was fired, James Jones was named the interim general manager. And then that Monday afternoon on Burns and Gambo, the exclusive conversation that Robert Sarver had was, what's going on right now? And he says, hey, we're good in the interim.
I talked to James last night, and James said, I want what's best for the Phoenix Suns, regardless of what role that means for me. My view, you know, just talking about James in general, is for one, I think James is a great asset for the team, for the organization. I envision that he can add value to the organization. I don't know in what job capacity or in what role. But my goal is to do what's best for the organization.
Isn't that strange? I mean, we're sitting here in the decision. It makes me feel like it was highly emotional, the decision to fire Ryan McDonough. And again, I'll say it. I will stand on the soapbox forever and say this is the definition of a chaotic organization that fires their general manager 9 days before the start of the regular season.
And I am with you.
We can argue all day long whether Ryan McDonough was good at his job. I don't even know how to evaluate Ryan McDonough because, honestly, I don't know what moves were his and what moves the owner said, go do this. So that's why I just kind of stand, I admit, middle of the road on Ryan McDonough because I don't know how you judge a guy in that situation. But when I heard that, where it's, we'll put him here in the interim and then we'll figure out what role James Jones is best at within the organization, I don't blame James Jones for this, but I look at Robert Sarver and say, that's further proof. This was just an emotional, I'm done with this, on either Ryan McDonough's part or Robert Sarver's part. Hard to really know
that's
where
really
this organization's
point.
Going.
That's really good, but give yourself the wolf howl right there, because you've improved the broadcast right there. Really is a salient point made by Doug Gleason, and that happens once every 3 years, ladies and gentlemen. But let me just say this. I mean, look, this is a very GM thing to do for the most part, what's happening today. James Jones is going to sit down. He's going to have a press conference, right? He's going to talk about the Phoenix Suns. He's going to sit down, and that's going to happen at 10:30 this morning, and he's going to talk as vice president of basketball operations.
According to the official email, James Jones will be available to discuss the 2018-19 Suns season with the media tomorrow. We got that yesterday, so therefore the presser is today at approximately 10:30.
Just a very GM thing to do. James Jones is the GM of the Phoenix Suns. He is or isn't? He just doesn't have the title, whatever it may be right now, right? And yet he's going to sit there like a GM, and he's going to answer a lot of questions.
On the official email, he is listed as the Suns' vice president of basketball operations.
Yes, but on the media advisory that we received in regard to the firing of Ryan McDonough, right, it said, in the interim,
right,
James Jones, and I forget the other guy, I'm just totally spacing his name, another front office personnel member, but they were going to actually assume the general manager duties. So I think we all know James Jones is the likely candidate to be the general manager. And I'm wondering why Robert Sarver, if in fact that's the case, doesn't just name him that now. Because otherwise, to your point, Douglas, you're spot on. It was an emotional thing, and again, that's what I believe. I believe there was no way this was a plan. We're going to let him go ahead and orchestrate the entire offseason, and then 9 days before we open, we're going to fire Ryan McDonough. That was not the plan.
To be specific for you, according to the Suns release when we found this out, it doesn't even say who the general manager is. It actually says, in the interim, general manager duties will be handled by Vice President of Basketball Operations, James Jones, and then the person you were trying to remember, Assistant General Manager Trevor Buckstein, will be in charge. So it's just, and then it says Jones will manage basketball operations, including the oversight of coaches, players, and staff, while Buckstein will be the primary contact for player transactions.
But isn't it interesting they're not naming him interim GM?
Right.
They're not doing that yet. He's doing all the duties.
Yes. And for me, when this press conference starts at 10:30, I want to know who's up there, because if Robert, because when I read the press release today, it says you can talk to him about this upcoming season. That doesn't sound like Robert Sarver's going to be there to answer questions about the firing of Ryan McDonough. And I have to ask, why not? I mean, why not? Because when I look up at James Jones, and I want to be very clear, this man, this is a really good person to have within the Suns organization.
Amen.
You're dealing with a guy that's a player that actually doesn't have a problem with analytics. I like that. I still think you don't play baseball with a calculator. You don't shoot a calculator in basketball. You do not throw a calculator to a receiver in football.
Yes.
But analytics makes you a better organization if you embrace it.
I agree.
Just understand people play the game. And James Jones gets that. He has an unbelievable championship pedigree as a person, and I think he really understands a lot of different things about the game. Imagine him calling you up during a free agency period and saying, this is how LeBron liked it.
Ding, ding, ding,
ding. Do you like it like this?
Right.
You know, he knows how to cater to different people, different players, things like that. So I'm excited he's here, but I got to tell you, and James, I'm not trying to attack you in any way. I don't care that you're here. Because it doesn't matter who has that job as long as Robert Sarver continues to own the way he owns. And if Robert Sarver isn't going to change,
yeah,
why does it matter that we have a new general manager? Nothing really changes if Robert Sarver still gives the GM tag to other
Correct.
People, but he's the one that thinks he's in charge of running basketball operations.
I'm just wondering why he's not giving him the title right now. Why not do it right now? Honestly, Pruden says take a wait and see approach.
Maybe he's
really?
Judging to see if he gets the point.
I honestly just don't know about that. Listen, he was brought in here to repair the relationship between players and the organization, and I am telling you this, Basin Onions, I also believe he was brought in here to send a message to the rest of the league. We're not going to run this organization the way that we have in the past. And he also was brought in to actually recruit free agents.
I think that's true. Have you subscribed to the Doug and Wolf podcast? If not, subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Doug and Wolf podcast, and it's brought to you this week by PhoenixHousePainting.com.
So why not give it to them right now?
Coming up next from the Yachtin Community Studios, whose job is it to get David Johnson going? Steve Keim gave an answer. We'll tell you next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It hurts to hear it. I mean, there was one thing that was guaranteed going into the NFL season for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, guaranteed. You didn't know how David Johnson was going to be used in the pass game, but we all knew David Johnson's back. I'm stealing this from, I think, Bickley and Murata, but I remember the first two carries week one of the preseason. Okay, we're done, David. David's back. Here we go. David's going to get at least 90 yards a game. Rushing is not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
We'll learn when does Rosen start? How healthy is Bradford? How does Mike McCoy use David Johnson in the pass game? We had tons of questions, but there was one thing nobody questioned, and that is David Johnson in the run game and how devastating it was going to be. If you didn't hear it, just to let this wash over you right now, of all ironies or coincidences, Steve Berthiaume, depending on what you want to say, right now in the total rushing yards on the season, you actually have a tie between Adrian Peterson, of all people, and David Johnson at 21. He is the 21st leading rusher. He's trying to catch Royce Freeman. He's hoping to be the running back that Philip Lindsay is. Two Denver running backs are both above David Johnson. And on yards per attempt, now granted, you never know who's going to get what on yards per attempt, he is 42nd at 3.3 yards per attempt.
What's your point, Douglas?
What's going on is the point. How in Doug's the world did we get here?
He's trying to push us to the point of no return, the breaking point. I mean, Doug, at what point before we just start yelling in agony around here?
We asked Steve Keim, is this a Mike McCoy problem? Is this a David Johnson problem? Is it an O-line problem? Whose job is it to get David Johnson going?
It's all the above. Like I just said, and it's all about playing in unison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with that, you know, aside from the fact that it needs to be blocked up better, it could be maybe schemed better, it could be David Johnson running with more patience and better eyes. You know, it's all of us. And, you know, there's no doubt that it needs to be corrected. And, you know, we got to continue to work on things. And you know, whether that's, you know, trying to work on the play action game and some of the things throwing in football that could make you run a little more effectively. There's a lot of different things that we can look at. And I know we're working hard on it right now. And, you know, David Johnson's, I know at some point in time and hopefully sooner than later, is going to have a breakout game.
That last point to me is the one you can address immediately, and that is the play action game. That's the one to me that is the most correctable. Teams are loading the box. Did the Niners load the box? Yes! Did Reuben Foster absolutely blow the A-gaps on run blitzes with impunity? Yes. And the Cardinals didn't make the Niners pay when they did that.
Yes.
And you know Zimmer's going to do that. Absolutely. Here it comes, straight up the middle. The A-gap blitzes. You got to make these teams pay because right now they are loading the boxes and the Cardinals really... David Johnson's just been stymied because of it.
Yeah, you know what? Also, you know what's interesting about it? David Johnson, first of all, Basinonians, I absolutely love this dude. This guy as a person, as a man, is incredible. He truly is, and I think we all know that, right? I would say in the same vein as a Larry Fitzgerald, that's who David Johnson truly is, and I think he's going to be that way for years and years and years, and he's such an incredible talent. But the one thing I do believe David Johnson has got to develop is a little bit of something coming out of the side of his neck in regard to talking to his teammates. I'm just saying right now,
it's time for a little hammer time.
I have played with a lot of great running backs, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of great backs. Otis Anderson, I guarantee Otis Anderson, my rookie year, would call the offensive line together. And you guys, I'm telling you right now, you're getting stuffed at the point of attack. We stink. We're not blowing anybody off the ball. You better... There was a lot of bleeps in there as well, ladies and gentlemen. He would scream. There was no doubt about it. And you know what? Kevin Mack, as quiet as Kevin Mack was for the Cleveland Browns, Kevin Mack, man, I'm telling you, get stuffed. Sucks. I at some point in time, every great running back at some point in time has got to be capable of challenging his offense and his offensive line in particular.
I was told by a friend who played center for the Chiefs for 11 years that Christian Okoye would say on the sideline, just he wouldn't get mad at anybody, but he would just say, "You were in the hole, so I hit you."
And that's not
that
good.
Was the boss.
And I was,
that was Jerome Bettis.
I'm just going to run. Listen, right. I know where I'm supposed to go. Hey. It's your fault you didn't get your guy moved, so I'm just hitting you.
Well, and there was some of that.
Hurt.
There was some of that with Adrian Peterson last year. Remember, that was his rep that he's going to get it, and he's coming. If you're in the way, tough. He's running right up your back, and DJ Humphries found
that might be good for David Johnson, wouldn't it? For him to go running over his own lineman.
Just saying, at some point
like that,
in time,
Paul,
he needs to have, I think, a little bit of confidence to do that and say that he. David is such a humble guy, and it's why I love him. And it's the reason why he continues to look at himself and slide himself under the microscope and say, I need to get better. But at some point in time, all that talent, all that goodness has got to turn into leadership as well, where you challenge your offensive linemen. And Jerome Bettis, I played with Jerome Bettis the last year in the league, my last year, the 10th year in the league, 1995, Basinonians, played with Jerome Bettis. And Jerome Bettis would challenge you. He challenged me. 10 years in the league. You get your butt stuffed in the hole, to your point. You get your butt stuffed in the hole, I'm bringing it. And he would.
Well, keep an eye on Linville Joseph. I remember 2 years ago going to play the Vikings, and A.Q. Shipley raved about Linville Joseph, the most underrated nose in the league. You saw him with a 64-yard touchdown return off the fluke, batted pass, right? And then he grabbed the oxygen mask and put on the sunglasses on the Vikings sideline. That was solid. That was good. But
that was fun.
I mean, that guy is a certified badass on the nose. I mean, that guy, he will ruin your run play from the get-go if you don't figure out how to double him and get him out of the equation.
I'm wondering, too, this is still within the same confines because the whole offense has to get better. Kendall Wright, is he going to play?
No.
And this was Steve Keim on that.
You know, that has not been determined. I know he's, you know, had a couple good days of practice. You know, the one thing we have to be concerned about was when we determine on Saturday who's going to be up and who's going to be down. And sometimes that's determined on Sunday is, you know, based on a number of injuries that we're dealing with. So, you know, it's a number of offensive linemen that have to be up and a number of other positions, defensive ends. So if we're dealing with certain injuries, you know, that it could be a challenge. The one thing I will say that excited me about Kendall is based on the tape that I watched, you know, the guy has caught the football extremely well. He snatches it out of the air, can go up and get in a crowd, crafty, savvy route runner. You know, and we need a guy who's going to be able to catch the football. In my opinion, far too many drops so far this season.
I love that little piece there because we all see the drops. But even beyond drops, how rarely do we see a guy who is covered rip the ball away from the opposition? Go get the ball before anybody's able to take it from them.
I will tell you one of the best stories you have ever heard, Basinonians, in regard to a running back that actually took charge of a situation. I have no time to tell you that story right now. I have none. But I can tell you, as it pertains to David Johnson, I do believe it's important that at some point he develops that ability to walk up to an offensive lineman, stare him dead in the eye, and say, "Stop getting stuffed."
Wolf ignored your point, Doug, so I'm ignoring Wolf, and I'm coming back to your point about the receivers. And I thought that was the most revealing part of your entire interview with the GM, because that was on his own. That was unprompted. Yes. He made the comment about the drops half dozen two games ago, at least three this past game. He's at the point of zero tolerance right now. And you saw it. He made a move. He signed a guy because of the drops and the lack of contested catches. I mean, if somebody needs to get called out, it's the receiver room right now. Stop dropping balls. It's killing the offense.
Good point. The question is Kendall Wright going to play? And you take that and go, receivers aren't catching footballs.
Yeah.
That's strong on his part.
And Paul killed the tease.
Coming up next, what do the Cardinals need to do to stop the Vikings offense, and where are the Cardinals with Robert Kamdichi?
And I'll tell you the story.
It's cool. I'm out of here anyway. It's a hit-and-run job.
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Day.
Drive it like a rental.
The Vikings have a lot of weapons. A lot of weapons.
You better believe it.
And just one thing that's simple for all of us in life, no matter how great you are, how well do you do the basics? How well do you repeat doing the right thing over and over again? And I was really amazed by a comment Patrick Peterson made, which really set it in stone, because granted, if you ask who is the best receiver in the NFL, and then you say, okay, who are the best receivers in the NFL? Even though a lot of us would know the stats a little bit, no one's going to say Adam Thielen is the best receiver of the NFL. No one's going to say that. But statistically, he's on fire now. He is the only receiver. And I mean, think about Jerry Rice for a second. Think about Larry Fitzgerald. He's the only receiver in the history of the NFL since the Super Bowl era started, and one of only three overall, and the other two are 50s and 60s, that have 100 yards receiving in the first five games of a season.
Just stop it.
That's not asking a lot if you're thinking about a Jerry Rice. If you're thinking about great receivers, doesn't that seem like that's not that hard of a record? I mean, it's impressive, but it doesn't seem like a record that's impossible to have 100 yards receiving for your first five games. That sounds like, yeah, you're good, but that sounds like something Jerry Rice would have done, Fitz would have done when he had Kurt Warner or a good quarterback, and yet only Adam Thielen has done it in the Super Bowl era. And I love listening to Patrick Peterson just say, he just does everything right.
He does everything right. You know, if the route calls him to run 20 yards, he's going to run 20 yards. You know, he does a very good job of manipulating the defender leverage. He also has great body control, very strong with his hands. Just very, very clean with his route running and everything that he does. He does everything the right way.
What's amazing about Adam Thielen is the fact he's got 47 receptions on the season. Think about that for a minute. How many games have the Minnesota Vikings played? 47 receptions on the season so far for Adam Thielen. Mm. Now, think about this, Basinonians. When a defensive coordinator sits around and looks at the Minnesota Vikings,
Do you think they're a lot more real right now?
Do you think they're saying to themselves, you know what, we got to stop Adam Thielen?
I don't think they do. Wait, isn't that wrong?
And that's my point, Douglas. I think you're right. I don't think they do say that. I think they look at Adam Thielen and they say, you know what? You're still going to have to prove it to me. Okay. I know you had an incredible year last year, but Adam, you're still going to have to prove it to me right here. And I don't think they do anything special. And it's one of the reasons why Kirk Cousins is finding Adam Thielen on a regular basis, because I don't think they really take it that seriously. And I think the evidence is starting to mount that this guy, you better do something to take this guy away or else. And I think, honestly, I think Patrick Peterson is going to be interesting to see if, in fact, there's going to be more man cover being played by the Arizona Cardinals. I think the likelihood of that goes up. I think that we could see a Patrick Peterson on Adam Thielen. And in certain down and distances, in certain situations, maybe on Stephon Diggs as well. Because Stephon Diggs right now, oh, beware. Beware. I'm telling you right now, Basinonians, he's got the best takeoff move I have seen on film. He's got the best takeoff. It's a stutter step move where you're trying to sell a different move, and then all of a sudden you take off and run down the field. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you right now, it is like I watched it and almost did a spit take.
Ron Wolfley, you are Al Holcomb. What are you doing with Patrick Peterson?
What am I doing with Patrick Peterson?
Is it because of what you just said? You're on Diggs, that's it, we're done? Are you on Thielen, that's it, we're done? Do you wait to see who's starting to get off and you move him to that guy?
When a guy's got 47 receptions on the season, and you said how many times? 100 yards in each of the five
games? Every game, yeah.
Every game here? I think you've got to take Pat P and say, you got that guy, okay. Adam Thielen.
Everybody else, you've got Diggs. And then if you put too much attention on the wide receivers, they've got a good enough tight end in Rudolph to hurt you. I mean, he's not going to be the star of a game.
No doubt.
If you spend too much time worrying about everybody else, Rudolph will hurt you. And to your point from earlier in the show, that's kind of interesting with what Steve Keim said. If you're going to stop the Vikings, they've got to be third and long. And if they're going to be third and long, you got to stop the run. And if you're going to stop the run, you need Robert Kimdichie, who did not play last week.
Man.
And we asked Steve Keim, you know, Robert Kimdichie's played well this year when he's played. And he hasn't played a lot in his 3 years. Where are you, I asked him, on the scale of guys hurt, give him a break, and the other end of the scale of when are you not hurt? When are you going to get on the field? And this is what he said, which is kind of a wake-up call.
Well, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, everybody wants to talk about ability. Ability doesn't matter if you don't have availability. So those are, obvious concerns, and you have to be dependable. He's got the skills, and everybody sees that. He's been disruptive when he's been out there. But we need Robert to play. And, being a first-round pick, there's a lot of expectations, both from himself and from the organization. So expect to see him out here real soon. And again, back to being that disruptive player and why we drafted him.
The first thing I think of is just how much a game has changed. I'm sorry, ladies and
gentlemen. Why is that? Because
when I listen to that right there, all I can think of is, you know what, if in fact there was any way, shape, or form, if you were going to miss a game back when I was playing in 1985, ladies and gentlemen, it'd be like, shoot that thing up. Are you kidding me? Here's my foot, and stick it in there and shoot it up. Give me the blue juice. It's changed, of course, right? Player safety has just taken off in the National Football League, and it just is a reminder to me just how much the game has changed. I can tell you right now, you wouldn't have to convince anybody back in 1985 to take a needle. They'd be like, you know what? Give it to me. I'll jab it in there myself. That's the way that it was. Nowadays, it's like you have to beg. It's your prerogative as a player. You have to beg to get a shot. Boy, has the game changed.
For the better or for the worse?
I don't know. You know what? From a player's perspective, I loved the era that I played in. And I'd never want to play in another one. Ever. That's just me.
Yeah, I get it. Steve Keim, what are the chances? Because he said in the near future, you know, very soon, we're going to see him very soon. Well, is very soon Sunday against Minnesota?
I think he's got a chance. Again, I don't want to make a comment that is going to come back to haunt me, but I think there's a real chance that he plays.
Well, you know what? It's going to be so important, too, because I look at the Minnesota Vikings offensive line, my brothers, and I don't see a dominant force there. I do not. I don't see bad players, per se. I see guys that look strong but are non-athletic for the most part. Rashad Hill, their right tackle, is maybe the stiffest guy I've seen on film all season long. And Mike Remmers as well, Tom Compton, their guards, I think are really, really stiff. And Riley Reiff, their best offensive lineman, their left tackle, may not play. This is one of the reasons why the onus again squarely is on the Arizona Cardinals defense to go out and attack this offense. And the best way to attack the Minnesota Vikings offense is to attack their offensive line. They don't run the ball well. Number 31 in rushing yards per game and number 29 in rushing yards per play. You put it together, ladies and gentlemen. Five games into the season, you are what you are right now. Those numbers aren't lying, especially when you watch it on film. So the onus is on the defense to attack that offensive line. And when you talk about that, you're talking about the tip of the spear. Robert Kimdiche.
Yep, absolutely. Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2 o'clock live today from the Safeway on 32nd Street and Camelback in Phoenix. We'll be giving away tickets to upcoming games, plus telling you how to win some incredible prizes through Safeway and Albertson's Score Great Deals promotion this football season. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. Coming up next, got two things we got to go over. Thursday Night Football, and how it relates to the Arizona Cardinals, because it's really interesting to see how everybody's tied in together. But first, James Jones is going to speak to you about the future of the Suns. What do you have to hear to buy in? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.